Hello everyone, welcome to another cool episode of Retro Rewatch. That's the podcast where we talk about retro TV shows, and when I say we, I of course mean me, Patrice, and my good friend and podcast compadre, Jeff Gamet. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Patrice, and I really am happy to be here because once again, we get to hang out and we get to nerd out on some Stargate.
We do get to nerd out on some Stargate. So we are still in, well, we just started our journey into season 4 of Stargate SG-1 after, well, finishing up the season cliffhanger, of course, and having an interesting, very deep moral discussion last episode. We're gonna get into very different territories this time around with season 4, episode 3, Upgrades. You had some really fun predictions for this one. It's like, okay. What was it? The other side. I mean, you were kind of right. I mean, a way to make super soldiers and an opportunity to get new tech, which is great for the fight with the whole world, was actually exactly what we needed.
Oh, okay, yes, but at the same time, the episode wasn't in the spirit of the way I meant it, which is actually a good thing, because if I could predict something that accurately, it would concern me that they'd become, and I'm sure I've said it before, way too formulaic in the way they're making episodes.
Yes. I mean, it kind of. There were a lot of hints in the title. And I mean, you know kind of what kind of shows, but what kind of episode this could be. So, yeah, it's, I mean, we have the whole Go World Apophis threat still looming. So, yeah, and that's exactly where we go in. As usual, I have some production notes, so let's do that first. Mm-hmm. I would say July 14th, 2000 is when it originally aired in the US, Showtime. So, and June 13th, 2001 is when it aired in Germany. So I'm pretty sure I watched that live, because at that point I was definitely watching things live. So we're in 2001. We're getting close to September 11th, like at least when it aired in Germany.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yes, it's still a little bit away, but in Germany, we were close to that. IMDb rating, quite good for this show, at 8.3 out of 10. We have a new dream team, you could call it. We have David Rich gets the writing credit, even though it was quite heavily rewritten by, I think, Jonathan Glasner at that point. Albright Wright, I don't remember. As it is, like, union rules and, you know, all of that, because he wrote the first draft and he wrote the initial story, he gets the writing credit. And it is directed by our all-time friend, Martin Wood. We know him. He's done this before.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yes. Yep. David Rich, I should mention, this is the only writing credit he got in SG-1, but he doesn't do a lot of TV writing, at least not credited, I checked. Even though he is actually a very close friend with producer Michael Greenberg. Executive producer Michael Greenberg, they work closely together. I just watched a YouTube video from, I think, last year or something, or this year even, where they talked about exactly this episode, and Greenberg actually joined for a little bit, and it was super interesting. I did not share that with you, Jeff, because there's a lot of spiders in that. I didn't want to do that. But he also wrote two episodes of MacGyver, so David Rich did, so... No, he's mostly a book author, so that's usually what he does. Still publishing a lot of books, and he is writing stuff, and he's on writing staff. He just usually doesn't get credit for it, apparently.
Okay,
but he's still like working a lot with Michael Greenberg to this day. Like he mentions it in this podcast. It was like, yeah, basically whenever I have a new idea and I need to like prepare it and pitch it, like I reach out to you. So that's how it works. Yeah, Martin would we know. So then we have some interesting guest stars. First and foremost, I think for everybody quite visible, Vanessa Angel? I don't know what language that was. Actually British, so probably Angel. She's a British actress, a former model, known for playing Lisa in Weird Science. Never heard of that. Kingpin.
I heard of the movie. Is the TV show?
No, it seems to be a TV show.
Based on the movie?
Maybe. Kingpin, I don't know. 1996. She was discovered at age 14 by agent Eileen Ford and appeared on covers on Vogue and Cosmo. So, yeah. Known, I would say. Known person.
Known, and yet I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, she's definitely not one of the big people that you would recognize. But there's a story behind, and we'll get to that in a second. Of course, we have Gary Jones as Walter, as usual. We have Dan Shea as Shea? I don't know. I'm always messing that up.
I've been saying Shay.
Shay.
Dan at least Shea. In my head, but I don't know. Yeah,
probably. I said I always messed that up. we've had him so often, I still don't know. Certain Siler, of course. Terrell Rothery comes back. And Martin Woods gets another uncredited little scene. As Major Wood, of course. There you go.
See, I need to pay attention to his cameos.
Yeah, he's not as recognizable as not Dom DeLuise. Now I'm blanking on it. Peter DeLuise.
Peter, yes, Peter. Sorry.
I was like, Dom. I was like, no, not Dom. We have a German title, and I told you I would not tell you what it is because it's, as usual, German, contains spoilers. It's Das Vermächtnis der Ataniker, the legacy of the Atanics. Yes. What is this? So, I don't know if upgrades was more of a spoiler, but I didn't want to give you more.
Yeah, between the U.S. title or the English title and the German title, I probably could have laid out most of the episode for you.
Yeah, I think so, too. So, as far as the production, there is a ton of background info I have. First and foremost, Vanessa Angel, like, why is she there? She was cast as part of a strategy to introduce an attractive female character following Seven of Nine's success on Star Trek Voyager. So Jeri Ryan.
So Amanda Tapping, they didn't consider to be attractive?
Well, I mean, not on that same level. She's attractive for sure, but like, there's some difference, I think. Like you want a supermodel, right, basically.
Okay.
You know, and it's all men anyway, so.
Is
you
know. A model. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, unlike Seven of Nine, fan reaction to Anise or Freya was mixed, and she did not become a regular character on the show. But we will, and I'll tell you that now, we will see her a couple episodes for that reason. So eventually, she'll just disappear again.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but that's the reason why they introduced her. Which, I mean, you know, 90s sexism, men being in charge of shows and night, like wanting to look at beautiful women, like all of that.
Yeah, that's why Jeri Ryan had to be basically painted into her costume for Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah. And you see the parallels here. Like, look at Anise. Like the costume she's wearing and all of that, and you're like, yeah, it's quite obvious.
Yeah, I mean, once you point out that this was triggered by Seven of Nine joining Voyager, I can just like pick it all out. I can see it. It's really clear.
Yeah. I did find some original details about the concept that Rich originally envisioned. He originally envisioned finding the armbands on another planet and bringing them home. So kind okay. of reversed almost. He imagined simple bracelets about like 2-3 inches wide. He mentioned that in the podcast even. So not the big things we got at the end.
Okay.
Not the complex flapping prop. And speaking of that prop, that was a nightmare. They had lights, they had electronics, it was opening and closing, and they flew off actors' arms, they overheated, they damaged easily, they slowed production, like it was a nightmare, I think. So eventually they just made static versions that they didn't open and close that they could just wear. So
okay.
It's kind of, yeah, I mean, kind of expected if you look at it, like how complex they are. There is one deleted scene that I could find towards the end when they Daniel like runs off to steal the Naquada. They actually have a scene how he does that, but they had to cut it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, but there's a deleted scene for that. Yeah. There's a couple more things I want to mention, but we'll just save them for later. So
okay.
That's it. Overall, there were some interesting bits I could find, as I said, especially there's a YouTube interview with Rich that was quite interesting.
Okay.
Should we just jump in then?
We should.
If you have no more thoughts about what happened so far, I'm like, okay, let's just jump in.
It's no, I mean, that's great setup for what I experienced in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of hit the ground running. We might as well too.
Okay, let's do that. Well, they literally running is the right word. So we start with the gate room, the gate is dialing, SG-1 is kind of waiting there with Hammond, like everybody. All they got so far is a vague message from the Tok'ra. Jack notes that, in fact, the Tok'ra are starting to annoy me in general. and Carter mm-hmm. kind of looks at him for a little bit and is kind of surprised. He's like, don't get me wrong, Carter, your dad's great. I love him like a brother, but it's just that every time they show up, seems like there's all kinds of, and then the gate opens and Anise steps through, and then he says, yep, that looks like trouble to me.
yeah, it's, I mean, okay, so, we already have a great setup for the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically spoon feeding us the episode right
Pretty
here.
Much. Pretty much, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Anise introduces herself and she says her name means noble strength. Hint, hint.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel's like, I'm Daniel. It means God is my judge. And Jack, of course, has to do his Jack thing. And he says, I'm Jack. It means what's in the box.
Right, because she has a big box with
yeah,
her.
She has
yep. a box with her. yep.
Yeah, it has to be. There has to be some Jack quips and funny lines. Like, it's just his things. So, you know where we have to go next.
Right. We have to explain what's in the box.
Exactly.
And the best place to do that is in the exposition room.
Exactly. So, that's where we go. So she's brought 3 iron bands from the Atenik civilization. It's an extinct race predating the Goa'uld. Interesting, I have to say.
So these are ancient.
These are ancient, yes. We get the Jolinar wiki this time, not the Tilk wiki. Because she's like, oh yeah, I recognize them. They're supposed to give strength and speed.
Yeah, interesting that we get a Jolinar wiki instead of a Teal'c wiki
mm-hmm.
on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Carter, like, the other beautiful woman on the at the table needs to say something, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what was going on. I couldn't find anything what was going on behind the scenes. Like, I mean, we know it's quite well documented what happened on the Voyager set when Jerry was introduced. So I'm kind of wondering what happened here. But
yeah. That would be interesting to know.
Couldn't find anything. I'm just thinking it probably wasn't a happy crew.
Yeah.
But you know who was excited? The Tok'ra. Because...
Oh, of course.
Because when they found them, there's just a little problem with them. They don't work on people with symbionts. So they tried. And they're like, hmm. And she says, in fact, according to the descriptions, they should greatly increase all of your natural abilities. So it's not just strength. It's like all abilities, basically, should be improved. They're definitely spoon feeding us what's going to happen in this episode. Like, we literally already know where this is going to go.
We're totally getting the expected Stargate ham-fisted layout.
Yes, and you know, Hammond is kind of like, not sure, maybe we should do some research, maybe Carter and Daniel can do something, but Anise basically kind of pressures them into volunteering. Like, she had hoped to begin human trial experiments immediately, and she's like, well, I mean, we can take them somewhere else if you want, but you were our allies, so we were kind of hoping do something with you, kind of like that. She's quite direct. She's a German.
Yeah, and and with the new insight that I have, it's clear that they were mimicking Seven of Nine's character to a degree.
God, because Seven of Nine is
very direct.
Hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, you're right. She's kind of like that. She's not a Borg, but she's still, like, set German.
Yeah, there you go.
So the question lingers, will they? And that's
of course all we get. They will.
That's all so, we get.
All right.
Because now we get the intro.
Yeah, and at this point, I already know the whole episode.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Right. And it played out just like I expected.
Yeah.
You know, the little details about how do they show everything that goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, I didn't know what those would be, but I already knew exactly where we were going with this.
It's kind of obvious, right? Okay, there's this new device, so they're going to do experiments. Something is going to go wrong. Like, they're going to have like really cool result, but then something is going to go wrong.
And then it's a race against the clock to get them off before
whatever
the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of easily predictable from what we've just talked about. So the first whatever minute or two, we already know where the rest of the episode is going. It's still a fun ride, but it's all like, okay, we know where it's going. It's not a very complex story.
No, it is not.
So we go to a lab, gym, I don't know. There's gym equipment. It's also kind of a lab set. I don't know. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's we've seen this set dressed this way before.
Oh, have we? Didn't even realize that.
Yeah, and I can't remember the episode, but there's a whole exchange with Jack and Teal'c in that spot.
Okay.
In a previous episode.
Probably. I mean, the set, for sure. They didn't build a new set. I just didn't remember this lab gym room. It's kind of two in one. Yeah,
I assume it's supposed to be a gym.
Yeah, but it also a lab. They were like, kind of looked like a lab. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Anyway, Jack is first. So Anise puts a Tok'ra biosensor down Jack's chest, like way down. I'm like, why does it need to go all the way down there?
Yeah.
It's like the shirt, and she's like going down. I'm like, okay, how far down is she going to go? Where is this answer going?
Is it now that kind of show?
Yeah, I think, I don't know what, I think we know exactly what the idea was.
Okay, and I just realized I'm being true to form,
mm-hmm.
and I have mixed up scenes.
Already? We haven't even started.
We haven't even started, and I mixed it up. Okay, so the set they're on, yes, this is a set we've seen before. We've seen it dressed this way before.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the where Jack and Teal have some sort of interaction.
Oh no,
that's not, actually coming.
Yes,
in a later coming scene later,
where they have the sparring match. Yeah, that set we've definitely seen. No, this lab gym setup was kind of strange. But no, it has lab things on one side and gym equipment on the other side, and I mean it's very clear they need both later for what's going to happen. But it's like. Like it's, rational, like on a base, why would you have that?
You know, okay, so in retrospect, I am now thinking that that it's just the one set. They had the lab stuff
mm-hmm.
along one wall, the gym stuff on the other wall. Yeah. And since it was not widescreen
mm-hmm.
for regular television, you couldn't see that part. But when they remastered for widescreen, it's in the shot.
I mean, that I bet is it wasn't possible. In the
original shot.
That is possible, but I think we also needed both at some point. So, yeah, but you're right. No, actually, you're right. It's probably exactly what happened. It was actually a lab set that they needed for lab stuff, but then they put in gym stuff because they needed gym stuff. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's still strange. It was a strange room.
At least we're not seeing crew people in a shot.
Nope. So Jack puts on the cuff thingy. It's like a nice effect. It closes and whatever. And he's like, I don't feel any different. And then Anise, of course, has to explain it may take time. We believe it was designed this way to gradually give you the chance to adapt to your new abilities. In the meantime, feel free to move around and interact with your environment as you normally would. The biosensor will transmit readings over a significant distance. So, kind of, yeah. Moving on. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. But now you have me really thinking about the whole biosensor thing. Because if it had gone down any farther, she would have been putting it in their pants.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, yeah. Usually you would think, like, if it was some sort of biosensor, it probably would have put it over your heart or whatever. But no, she was, like, really going down. I'm like, okay, where is this going?
I guess now we know what kind of readings she wanted.
I mean, yeah, possible. Possible. It was just an interesting choice. And this is where we go to the sparring room that you mentioned.
Yeah. Because okay, so let's turn the camera to the other side of the set.
Yes. So Jack and Teal'c are sparring again. We've seen this before in the fifth race, I think. Right? Like Jack was kind of
using the wrong alien words to describe body parts and stuff.
So, so this is definitely a mirror of that. The only difference, I mean, Jack is again kind of out of sorts. The difference is this time they're sparring and Teal'c notices that Jack is better today than he usually is. So they're doing this more mm-hmm. often, which kind of makes sense. And then Teal'c tries to hit Jack and we get this really nice effect where Jack basically bends out of the way very quickly and it's kind of blurry.
Mm-hmm.
And then he knocks out Teal'c with a single punch.
Yeah, Teal'c went down hard.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And he's not easily, I mean, you don't take him down easily. He's a big and strong guy. So so I think they take him to the lab infirmary kind of place.
I thought they took him to the snack bar.
Yeah, because Jack
he's like sitting there just Jack next is scene, eating Teal'c's just sitting there nom nom nom.
Yeah, Jack is eating an energy bar. Fraser's there and Teal'c, she's like, yeah, Teal'c is fine. Jack is sorry, not sorry. It's like, yeah, not really.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, he probably got knocked out by Tyrk quite a lot, because Tyrk is usually better than him at stuff like this.
Yeah.
And Anise gives him like a kind of a squeeze ball thingy that is a strength measuring device. And she says, it's like 5 times normal. And Jack is like, so no increase then.
Yeah, he like actually crushes it.
No, crushes it later. That happens later. This is the first
time. Oh, okay. Well, I'm consistent.
You're consistent. This happens later. But what he does crush is the throw of the wrapper into a cup thingy across the room. So that's
go
that
Jack.
He does crush.
But yeah, so no increase then.
Yeah, exactly. No increase. We get an explanation for the snacking he's doing, because his metabolism is of course speeding up to match the changes, right? Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing more, you're doing more things more quickly, you probably need more energy. Fraser kind of wants to learn how to read the tablet thingy that Anise has brought, but she is kind of being dismissive. She's like, yeah, later.
Yeah, and this totally fits with everything I'm expecting.
Mm-hmm.
She has been withholding critical information.
Yes.
And it's going to bite everyone in the ass.
Yes, and hiding it and not trying to dismiss the people who are nosy and want to know more and would figure out that that something is wrong. So, next subject. And it's Daniel. And the placement of the sensor this time around is again funny, because it's on his left nipple. I'm like, okay. I mean, he did.
So she went to Jack's pants.
Yeah.
And she's all about nipples with Daniel.
Yeah, apparently.
I'm afraid for you to tell me where she tries to put Carter's sensor.
We don't know. It's never shown.
Oh, okay. Well, that one's left up to our imagination then.
Yes, it is. Carter's fully dressed, so like black t-shirt and everything. So who knows? It's never dressed.
Okay.
She already has the cuff on when we see her.
Oh, so she already has her sensor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wherever they put that, she already has it.
Well, I'm just going to stop there.
Just leave it.
I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah, it's just funny. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the rationale here was. Like, it's just ridiculous.
There's a lot that feels like it's just way too easy setup.
Mm-hmm.
Tealc can't wear one. She shows up with just 3 bands.
Mm-hmm.
So she already knows who she wants to put them on.
Yeah, of course. And, I mean, that's kind of course. I mean, they knew that, right? I mean, she mentioned that at the beginning. It's like, yeah, anybody with a simple. But apparently Carter is not a problem. So.
Right.
Which they knew, apparently.
Yeah. So, but and of course she assumes it's going to be SG-1 that this test is run on.
Not random. And not. Person
that's some other SGT. Yeah.
Yeah. Random person that's like disposable if something happens. No, it has to be this G1, of course.
Well, okay. So if they'd been put on disposable people, we knew those soldiers would die.
That's true. Yeah. Might have been more interesting than what we got. So we go to Daniel's lab, and Daniel has the cuff on and he's looking at it and he's trying to decipher the inscription on the cuff. And Jack comes in, and he just picks up a book, and then I really like that effect. He's speed reading through the book.
Yeah, it's like the same blurry thing when he was dodging punches, but now it's flipping through pages in a
and
book.
And I looked at it a couple of times because I wanted to see how they did that, and I could not work it out. Like either he's like I mean it's probably some special effect or something. Or, I don't know, they sped something as we're speeding up the video, whatever, but like it is done well. Like I could not tell how they did that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's done really well. And I like that Daniel's like, holy crap, did you read that? Mm-hmm. And Jack's like, yeah.
Yeah, and doesn't believe some questions.
Jack. And Jack just like almost annoyed mm-hmm. with how mundane the questions are yeah. and the answers he provides.
Yeah. And Daniel tries it then too, and it's not working for him yet.
Yeah.
Carter's lab. So we have to, of course, check on Carter, which is she doing. Mm-hmm. So she has at least seen some effects. Daniel hasn't yet. But Fraser comes in, and Carter is running some tests on the material of the cuffs or something, supposedly in the dark. Fraser turns on the light, and Carter's like, argh, argh. It's like, oh, yeah. It's too bright. She didn't even realize she was sitting in the dark. So her eyesight is definitely increased.
Yeah. And I believe Dr. Fraser showed up to let her know, hey, you've got a fever.
Not yet. She just showed up to check up on her, but that's literally what happens next scene, because we go to the infirmary, because Fraser, of course, wants to check out, like, what's happening with Carter. And mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, your light sensitivity has increased. And then she does measure the temperature and take some other vitals, and she's like, yeah, you're running a slight temperature. And I think Carter asks her, yeah, but, like, wouldn't that sensor thingy catch all of that? And that's when we learn that Fraser doesn't trust Anise. Like, she trusts the device, but she does not trust Anise.
Yeah.
So she wants to run a full blood screen. Get the vampires.
You know, that actually seems prudent.
Yes.
Also, why doesn't Dr. Fraser have her own sensors on the people as well?
I mean, was there something like that? I mean, yeah, maybe some. Yeah, there's some sensors you could have had in the late 90s, early 2000s that you could put on people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had portable heart monitors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, you could have had something portable.
Else. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Something else, at least. Yeah, but at least she wants to run a blood panel, so that's good. We go back to the lab, and Jack is on a running machine, and he's running super fast. So we see the speed on the computer, and it's like 102 miles per hour. I'm like, well, that is pretty fast.
That would be fast.
And Jack is like, I'm not even sweating. In fact, I think that thing is slowing me down. So you can run faster than that. That is pretty damn fast.
That's really fast.
Yeah. And then Anise gives him the same strength ball thingy. And this time, this is when he destroys it.
Ah, okay. So the close-up of him destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a slam on the show or the mm-hmm. prop makers. This is just an artifact of the quality of television displays today mm-hmm. versus when this came out.
Yes.
That prop looks like crap.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But back then, it would have been fine.
In SD quality, 4x3, probably fine.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's totally fine.
Or even if it was 16x9, it was still bad quality.
It was... I mean, by modern standards, mm-hmm. with modern technology for viewing a TV show,
yeah.
it actually detracts from the scene because it's so bad.
Yes. I mean, also hard to do, right? I mean, you have to have something that Jack can, with his normal human strength, crash, that looks like a crush, that looks like mm-hmm. it is like... whatever, solid metal, something that like,
and you probably need three of them or more because you need multiple takes,
like probably tons of them. So cheap also.
Yeah.
So we go back to Daniel's lab. And Daniel is gushing. He's like, oh, I mean, this is the most unbelievable, incredible thing I've ever experienced. I mean, I've cross-referenced the symbols of the armband against every written language on Earth in 1 hour.
Which, that's really,
That really is impressive. Yeah. And what did he find in this 1 hour? Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Yep.
So, but Annie is, of course, very helpful. All of a sudden, she's like, hey, by the way, I have a notebook for you to read.
Oh, this is the scene where they got a literal LOL out of me.
Yes.
Because yes. Daniel starts reading the book.
Yeah, he reads the book real quick, and then he looks at the inscription, and then he's like, the inscription says that with great power comes great responsibility.
And that's where I did my lol.
Yes. By the way, and I have a note here in my thing from the interview with David Rich. He said in the interview that he does not believe that's the original inscription. He's like, I mean, it was 30 years ago, so like his memory might be wrong, but he was like, I think the inscription may have originally been "In Dreams Begin Responsibilities" from Delmore Schwartz's poem, rather than the Spider-Man quote that we got.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also not 100% sure on this one. But he just said probably he's more a book nerd, so it's probably more his thing.
Yeah. Okay. That would make sense. But the intended effect of whoever put that line in,
yes,
it worked because I laughed.
Yeah. And Anise has an add-on and the ability to affect great consequences. It's getting quite obvious what her agenda is.
Oh, yeah. As if it wasn't obvious already.
Yeah.
As you have said before, bonk, bonk on the head.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's not something I've invented, but yeah. So the question that Daniel has that also nobody seems to be able to answer is, so what happened to the Antiniques? Like, they clearly died out, and they were clearly, they had quite powerful technology if they could do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't get an answer. Instead, we get the cuff that blinks and then turns yellow. Currently, that means that it's now fully primed.
Yeah. So now we can get on with the hijinks part of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we go back to the lab, and the first thing that happens is that Fraser wants to talk to Anise in the hallway, and Hammond is also there, because she's found something. She found a virus, which doesn't surprise Anise. She knew about it.
Of course she didn't tell anyone.
Of course.
Of course she did.
Yeah. She has a different thing. She's like, I object to the Fraser and Anise get kind of into a heated argument because Anise is like, I object to the interference in my experiment. And Fraser's like, I object to being kept in the dark about the conditions of people whose health I am responsible for.
Yeah, go Doc Fraser.
Yes. And Hammond is kind of in the middle and he's like, okay. So he asks Fraser what to do, and her recommendation is take them off until we know more. Which, of course, Anise has an objection to. But Hammond is quite sensible. He's like, no, I'm sorry. If there's one thing I've learned in my time here is that if there's nothing wrong with a little prudence when dealing with alien devices. Yes.
And he's right.
He's absolutely right. We've had so many alien devices backfire. Don't do that. The SG team kind of, as you want, doesn't want to. And Fraser says, I think the armbands may be having a narcotic-like effect. Wearing them may become addictive. It's just one of the things I would like to rule out. And Hammond orders them to take them off, which they begrudgingly try to comply with.
So, okay, I like how we got to this point through the scene, because we have Fraser just standing up and saying, no, we have a problem here, and we need to slow this bus down and do some more research. And Hammond's like, she says it, that's the rule.
Yeah. And also
take these off.
And also Anise has clearly shown that she has a different agenda. Right? She cannot be trusted. So I mean, she knew about it and she held back her information.
Yeah. And but so yes, she can't be
trusted. At least not with that.
I like how Hammond is like, nope, Fraser's word is gospel. This is what mm-hmm. we're doing. Part of the reason why I like this so much, it's a product of the time. And it would be very easy to have written this mm-hmm. where it's Hammond who's making all of these decisions.
Yes.
But they wrote it so that the person that logically should be doing it, who mm-hmm. also happens to be a woman,
yeah.
is doing it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could have also been written in a way where it's like, you know, where her advice is ignored because, you know, military leader, military man, Hammond wants to get
yes.
the weapons, right? And so he will ignore the prudent advice that a woman gives him because he is a military man, right? That could have also been written that way, like a trope almost. But he doesn't. He's like, nope.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't write it for the trope or the mm-hmm. stereotype.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, we also know that there has to be something that stops them from actually doing that.
Right. And
which in this case is they can't take them off.
And I'm like, huh, I should feel surprised. And yet I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it's actually, like, it was really, like, nicely acted, I have to say. I watched the team and how they're, you know, pretending to rip it off. I'm pretty sure the props were not that sturdy and they could have just ripped them off. So they kind of pretend ripping them off, but not really ripping them off and kind of being like, oh, can't.
Yeah.
But in a way that's still believable. Like, I mean, it's like, it's not that SG-1 couldn't. Didn't want to. I mean, it's not that SG-1 pretended they couldn't. No, they really couldn't.
Yeah.
They didn't want to, but they could. They followed the orders, or tried to at least. So there's a problem.
Yeah.
So we skip over some stuff because we go to Hammond's office, and Fraser's like, we've tried everything short of surgically removing their arms.
Oh, right. I forgot about this scene. How could I? Because Hammond's response
is funny.
Is fantastic.
He's like, we'll hold that option in reserve.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, we get that almost as a humorous line, mm-hmm. but I believe he is holding the option to amputate their arms to get those things off of them.
I mean, I can imagine a lot of scenarios where that would be the best thing to do. Right? I mean, if it's their lives, or I don't know, the planet or something, versus their arms, I think it's an obvious choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not an easy choice, but an obvious one.
Yeah. There is no evidence of any downsides, is basically what we get out of that. Yet, at least.
Yet. But
I mean, other than that, they can't take them off.
Yeah, but we know it's going to, to go south.
Of course. So, we go back to the lab, and Jack is bench pressing, what was it, 600 pounds, I think?
It was a lot. And he's just, like, doing it, just ch-ch-ch.
Yeah, super easy.
And Teal'c's watching him like,
He can do more than me now. He's definitely not concerned about not being able to take the cuff off.
Yeah, I like the way Christopher Judge is playing Teal'c in this mm-hmm. episode mm-hmm. because he's being stoic Teal'c, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you see the concern, mm-hmm. and you can tell that he's willing to step up when necessary and mm-hmm. deal with this situation in whatever way he needs to.
Yeah, exactly.
And Christopher Judge is doing all of this without talking.
Without talking too. And Jack does punch a hole in a punching bag.
Yeah.
Which is also fun.
Hmm.
It's like, no problems, sure. So, you know, who we should check in next? We haven't talked to Daniel at all.
You're right. But the cycle in this episode is, what's Jack doing? What's Carter doing? What's mm-hmm. Daniel doing?
Mm-hmm. So Carter's next.
Next.
Yeah, I love this scene, I have to say.
Did you catch what kind of computer she's using?
It stood out to me. Yeah, I think it was an Apple, right?
Yeah, it was a Mac PowerBook.
Yeah,
Been PowerBook at that
point. Yeah, that's true. It was a PowerBook. I was thinking about like what kind of Macintosh it was.
So it stood out to me first because it was a distinct design, mm-hmm. but also because when you're seeing other computers that they're using around the base, they tend to be like generic PC systems.
Yeah,
so but this was it just stood out.
This was she's speed typing, but the computer is too slow. It's really funny how they did that. Like she's like you see her like the speed thingy, and then you see the text keep going.
Yeah, that was done really well.
Yeah, and I mean I remember that was actually a thing. You could type like if the computer for some reason got slowed down. I don't know, some application was using more CPU than like it should have. You could actually end up in a point where like you typed something and then you would see it show up.
Yeah, just wait for it to spill out of the buffer.
Exactly. So I remember that. So Fraser is, of course, there. She has to take in her friend. Right? I think she's concerned about Carter.
Of course.
Carter is not concerned at all. And she's like, I'm writing a book on wormhole physics, but this damn computer isn't fast enough. When the buffer is full, I have to wait for it to catch up. And I get that. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that would be quite exciting. You can, like, I think she says, I've written 1,000-page book in under 2 hours. This has been something I've been dying to do but haven't had the time. I think we all imagine, like, being able to do that, like, being able to write a book in, like, 2 hours or something, and be, like, something that takes forever, usually, being able to speed run through it, right? And that's what Carter's doing.
So, okay. Side note for this scene, because I enjoyed it. I thought the effects were done well.
Yeah.
It was fun seeing a PowerBook. So we just get this throwaway scene that's here just to show how much faster she is. I want this book to show up in future episodes because she's written the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no indication that she's any smart. I mean, she's pretty smart, but there's no indication she's any smarter. She has not unlocked new understanding of wormhole physics or anything like that, right? She's just able to do that faster.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I think Fraser asks her, and she's like, why would I take this off? Like, this is perfect. I can do so much more now. And I think it's relatable. Yeah. Like, I think we all would be in that same position. Be like, hey, like, why would I?
No, I get it. In many ways, where they are right now in the story arc, this is like a dream come true. Look at everything I can accomplish. I can be so much more productive. All that stuff that I wanted to do that I just never had the time or the energy, I can bang through a life's worth of to-do list stuff in a day.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's literally that. So what's next? We go to Hammond's office. And
I forgot about this scene, but now I remember.
So Jack is there, and he's arguing that they should get out. They should go out and do something with the cuffs, right? Because I mean, he's getting antsy. He's like, okay, like we're better now. We should use this, right? He's action Jack.
Right, and Hammond's like slow the bus down.
Yeah, and Jack gets a little bit frustrated, and he kind of like kicks the like a corner of like his office wall, and it just destroys it, basically.
Yeah. And here's a moment where I'm just inappropriately fixated on a detail that doesn't matter. Because it's obviously a cinder block wall, or supposed to be a cinder block wall.
Yeah, but it looks
Kicks a big chunk out of the corner, and it breaks off, and as if a chunk of styrofoam just got kicked out of a styrofoam block.
That's pretty much what it is. No, it's probably
Patty
or something. I don't know. It doesn't.
But here's the problem that I have with the scene. Jack's boots don't have the superpowers that the bracelet gives him. Why is his boot still shiny and not scuffed after kicking a chunk out of the wall?
No, he has the Superman force field around him.
Oh, right. The super aura around what he's wearing. Sure. Yes, of course.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm with you. That made no sense. Unless his boots are super strong as well. Which, I mean, that's not a good look. And Hammond is like, Colonel, I'm concerned that you aren't in full control of your new abilities.
And that's a legit concern.
Yes. And he's also concerned for their well-being. He's like, yeah, this is not good. And Jack is like, and I appreciate it. And you're the boss. Whatever you say goes. I just want you to know that we're here for you. Ready to go. Just say the word. Like. Now. Like
right now.
just saying. So Hammond kicks him out. Unfortunately, that's not where the scene ends.
Because no.
You get a really horrific downside of this whole thing. It's something kind of well done, I think. Because on the way out, he kind of pats Siler on the shoulder, like he probably has done before a million times. Unfortunately, with his new powers and his new strength, that basically throws him down the stairs and kind of hurts him quite badly.
Yeah, he ends up in the hospital. We don't see him in the hospital, but we see him laying on the stairs. So the part that I love about this scene, and don't worry, I'm not getting morbid on you. It's the fact that Richard Dean Anderson is playing opposite of his stunt double.
Yes.
And his stunt double does a stunt thing in the scene.
Flies down the stairs. I love that.
I just love that.
Yeah, exactly. He is Richard Dean Anderson's stunt double usually. So, but he has that role as well. Yeah, it's perfect. Like it works really well for those two. Yeah, I mean, Richard Dean Anderson doesn't have to do anything but like pat him lightly on the shoulder.
Right.
That's enough. The rest is
just enough.
It's just really well done stunt.
Yep, and we even get a little bit of a Wilhelm scream out of it.
Oh, that's so true.
The Siler goes over, he's like, "Ah!"
Exactly, the Wilhelm. We have to have a Wilhelm somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, with that, they get sent to the quarantine room now, because they're like, they get a timeout, basically, because Jack has been bad, and Jack notices, like, Siler has a broken arm and a concussion.
But Jack doesn't seem that concerned.
Jack doesn't seem to be concerned. Neither is Daniel or Carter, like they're both missing there. And Carter's like, well, all I know is that I'm going to starve to death. I don't know about you guys, but I'm having some serious protein cravings. And they have an idea.
They do.
They do. They're like, hey, let's get some steak. And let's go to O'Malley's in town. Because that's clearly the best idea when you're dangerous and you basically got sent to your room by the principal, right?
Yeah.
So we go to O'Malley's, which is actually a real thing. It's not called O'Malley's usually. It's Horizons Restaurant on 100 Centennial Way in Burnaby. So in Vancouver, of course. Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
It's in town. It's the same town where the studios are. So But it is actually a restaurant.
Well, I assumed they were shooting on location, real restaurant, just because the front of the building, and it looks like they actually shot inside the restaurant for the other scene. So the scene.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Now I just realized why they played the scene the way they did and why I was disappointed. So continue and I'll tell you where I get disappointed.
Okay. Let's see where Jeff gets disappointed. So we learned that they're sitting at a table, there's beers on the table already, and we learned that they jumped the fence. And I think Jack is like, how high was that? Like 30 feet or something? It's like, yeah, okay.
Just like, yep, okay, well, we're fence hoppers now.
Yeah, and then,
the waitress, soldiers gotta eat,
and the waitress shows up, and then Jack starts ordering. He's like, three of the biggest steaks you've got with everything, rear and big potato. And then I think Daniel's like, four. And Jack is like, oh yeah, four.
and the waitress is like, okay, and starts to walk away. And everyone else is like, no, we haven't ordered yet.
It was just for Jack. And Carter has a funny line. She's like, me too, and french fries with mine. Oh, and a diet soda. And everybody looks at her like, she just ordered like a ton of food, but diet soda. And Carter's she's like,
but I like the flavor.
I like the taste better. yeah, and while the waitress is now basically ordering like a ton of food for them, they talk a little bit, and they know they're defying a direct order because Hammond told them to stay in the infirmary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jack says something. I don't remember what the context was, but he basically says, earth, stakes, there's a difference.
Either Sam or Daniel made a comment about how they have disobeyed orders before.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Yeah. That was the context. They're like, yeah. And I think Daniel said that, and Carter pointed out that they did that to save Earth, or vice versa. One of
the other. Something like that.
Yeah. And then Jack is like, oh, sticks, there's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think after he's done eating all that food, I guess, we see Carter playing pool. And she does like a trick shot where all the balls hit the corner pockets, which is actually something that, what's her name now?
Amanda Tapping.
Thank you. I'm blanking on her name.
She could do trick shots in pool in real life.
She actually did that.
Oh, that's super cool.
It's not a stunt double. She revealed that she hadn't played pool in a very long time and couldn't remember how to set up the trick shot when she was asked about it. But she actually did that. It's a real,
that's
real
cool.
Trick shot that she did. Yeah, I don't know how many takes it took. So.
Well, in my headcanon, she got it right on the first shot.
Yeah, of course. And there's, of course, the old trope, pool table, sexy lady there. There must be some not very bright dudes there hitting on her. And Daniel and Jack, of course, are also there. And Daniel gets called a geek. This is a trope. Like the person who's usually a geek and has probably been beaten up in school or whatever, bullied. And all of a sudden, he has his powers, and of course, he has to use that for that.
Yeah, I was having a big problem with all this.
Yeah,
and you're right about the trope. The one time I felt like they did the trope in a way that really worked well was in the second Christopher Reeves Superman movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and should I do a spoiler warning?
For a movie that's, I don't know how many decades old. That's,
what, like 40 years old or something? Okay.
Yes.
So there's a point in the second Superman movie with Christopher Reeves where he gives up his Superman powers so he can have a life with Lois Lane.
Yes.
And gets beat up really bad in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, he has to sacrifice his relationship with Lois to save the world and regain his powers.
Mm-hmm.
And after he does that, saves the world, we get a scene where he goes back to that same restaurant, bar, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The same people are there. And now, dressed as Clark Kent, he uses his Superman powers to beat up everyone else, you know, all the jerks.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the one time I felt like that trope was done well.
I know a couple of others. The Kingsman, I mean, fairly recent movie, but there's basically two scenes. There's one in the beginning, right somewhere in the beginning, where what's the actor's name now? I'm blanking. British actor, well known. Blanking on it. Colin Firth, I think. He does it. There's also a bar, and there's some people being really loud and rude, and he's being a British gentleman, so he basically tells them to not do it and not like attack him and whatever, and it's like you're gonna lose or something like that, and then he very elegantly beats them up when they don't listen, and we get a mirror at the end where the what's the actor's name, Taron Egerton, something like that. He's now gone through, like, he's become a Kingsman at the end. And we get the same scene, basically, mirrored, where the same thing happens. Like, he's sitting there, minding his own business, having a beer, in his, like, really nice suit and whatever. And the same people show up again, and they're like, okay, like, we're gonna beat you up now. And he's like, just don't. Like, manners maketh man, I think is just what they say. And I really like that scene, because it's like, he's not violent, he doesn't egg them on, he's like he actually tries to stop them from doing stupid things, and they just don't want to listen, so he's like, okay, I'm gonna teach you a lesson. the same people still haven't learned.
They rarely do.
Yes, so I like that one as well, but you're right, the trope is rarely done well.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten about that one. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's also about, whatever, 30 years later.
Yeah.
We don't see exactly what happens, but I think the implication is...
It's obviously a bar fight, yeah.
And I mean, of course, with their enhanced strength, they're probably going to win that one.
So this bookends my disappointment in the scene. It starts off with the stupid trope and ends with, we don't actually see the bar fight, but now it clicked why we don't see the bar fight. They probably weren't able to shoot the bar fight scene because, you know, the restaurant owners were like, yeah, you can do all this stuff in here.
Yeah.
But... not that, because they'll end up like having to screw stuff up and
Would have taken too long as well.
Probably
like in a real, like on a set you're like, okay, whatever, we can destroy stuff, whatever, but in a real bar you're like, okay, showing also probably hard, like showing how powerful they are, like they probably would have to like,
it would destroy, have been difficult to do in there. Yeah.
I mean, remember, they're not showing a lot, other than little things, they're not showing a lot of the strength and the like destruction that they can inflict, right?
Yeah, that's true.
There's tiny little things that are, let's say, relatively cheap to do. They did not do the big things. So we go to Hammond's office.
Yeah.
I love that scene. Because Hammond opens with, I thought the devices were supposed to enhance them physically, not make them stupid.
Yeah, that's a good line.
And Fraser is like, you'd have to ask Anise about that, sir. All I can tell you is that their erratic behavior could be explained by an increase of various hormone levels. You would almost describe it as some sort of intoxication.
Yeah.
And Hammond is like, okay, yeah, sure. Okay. How are we going to contain them even? Like, I mean, he's like, very clearly Like, they can put them in a brig, but like, that's not gonna stop them. They're just gonna like bend the doors open and just leave.
Yeah.
But Frasier has a different concern. Because she's like, the concern is greater than that, sir. Blood tests show early indication of multiple organ failure. The human body wasn't meant to be put through this. So there's the ticking clock that we were expecting.
Yep.
So they could die, yes.
So, yeah, they have to figure out how to get them off one way or another.
So Hammond is like, can you explain to me why several witnesses put you people at a restaurant in town last night? Which they can't. They're straight up lying. They're like, nope, don't know. But I think, was it Car? No, Jack. Was it Jack who said the fact that we were defying orders didn't even occur to us until we were actually defying?
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that line.
Yeah, and Daniel's like, it's like the armbands are having an effect on our ability to make rational choices. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Anise comes in, very conveniently, with some info from the Tok'ra High Council.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, how convenient.
Yeah. Apophis has a new battleship in the making. Sabotage attempts have failed, so let's send the team. And like everybody's like, yeah, this was planned from the get-go. And she's insisting, no, I did not know about any of this. But Hammond is like, I assure you, I've been at this a long time, and I know damn well when I'm being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't deny it.
No, like, she doesn't.
If you believe anything, believe this. If Apophis is allowed to complete this battleship, it will assure his dominance over the world, your planet, and the rest of this galaxy. And, oh, by the way, I downloaded all the info into your base computer.
Yeah, just, you know, a little something, something there.
Just a hint. So Hammond sends SG-1 back to lockup, and he's like, and I order you to stay in there. Because he knows, like, if they want to get out, they will just walk out.
Right, yeah. He can't contain them anymore.
Yes. And of course, SG-1 is looking at that information.
Of course they are. and they're like, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Hammond's office, Teal'c and Hammond are looking at the same information. And Teal'c is concerned. He's like, I like this scene. Like, Teal'c finally gets to do something useful.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, this is a huge problem. Like, no matter what you think about, like, the whole manipulation thing, that is a big problem. Like, she's right in it. So he's like, I will go alone. Like, clearly can take SG-1. Which Hammond points out is quite dangerous because they don't know a lot about this, but what they know is, like, this is probably well protected.
Right. And even points out something to the effect of, even you, Teal'c, can't get in there and sabotage this ship and get out on your own.
Yeah. But he's leaving the door open a little bit. It's like, okay, let's say I agree. Prove to me it isn't a suicide mission. So if Teal'c can work out a way how to get in, there might be a possibility. Like, Hammond sees that this is also, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for them. It's also a big risk for them. But so he has to consider all the options.
Yes, like cutting off arms.
Yeah, yes, it's true. So, meanwhile, in the lockup, they've of course been looking at information, and Carter has a plan. and they're like, hey, can't we just blow up the power core like we did before? But Carter is like, nope, the power core is completely sealed in trinium. Hey, we've heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, so that's what we have to take out somehow. But the power core is linked directly to some kind of liquid cooling system that's based in the facility. These pipes here lead into it. Where have you heard this before? a super ship weapon with a power core that overheats and explodes. I don't know, I've heard that before somewhere.
That's
so
I don't, if I've heard about it, it was probably a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I agree. I think that's what happened. So there's another problem though. Force fields. But Kara's like, eh, no problem.
Yeah, because we can resonate through them.
Exactly, because gold force shields operate on a frequency oscillation principle. If we're moving fast enough, theoretically, we should be able to see the oscillation interval and run right through. So there's a plan. They're going to run right through.
There you go.
And all the preparation I need for this is they need snacks. That's what Jack says.
It's snacks. Don't leave home without them.
Yes, especially when you're a superhuman thingy with like a cuff that's like making you eat a lot of snacks. So they get right to it. They go to the control room. They overwhelm the technicians. They dial out. I think they overwhelm them with like some, I don't know, they inject them with some something.
Yeah, I couldn't tell at first. Like, did they inject him? Did they give him the Vulcan neck pinch? It was hard to tell.
Yeah, but there were some syringes, so it was clearly something. Oh, okay. There, so something like that. And of course, the only person that makes it into the gate room before the doors close is Tilk. But of course, he can't stop him.
Right. Jack tells him, not this time, Tilk.
Mm-hmm. And zip right through the gate. And I think that everybody else comes back because there was an alarm, of course. And they also locked everyone out of the system.
Because of course they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's Carter. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Like, if anybody can, she designed the system, she can lock everybody out. Like, of course. So we go to the planet, and the planet is a funny thing. Like, the establishing shot that you see on the planet with the... you know, the kind of the totems in the front and the ship in the back. That's mm-hmm. actually a real place. Not the ship. But the outside shot is actually at the Kamui Mintara totems in the Burnaby Mountain Park.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually, I mean, I don't know, they probably use just a photo. It's like, I think it's just a special effect, so I don't think it matters. Maybe they shot it outside. Who knows? Actually, probably did because they were the guards and whatever.
It looked like at least part of it really was outside.
Yeah. So that's where they shot that. So real place. Actually, pretty cool place, I have to say. I thought the totems were also kind of special effects, but nope, they're actually real. You can go there, see them. It's a nice picture somewhere. They take out the guards and they run into the facility. We get the guards that are carrying the Naquada. Daniel says, "Oh, I'll go get it." And we get the first hint at something is wrong. Carter's getting hot.
Mm-hmm.
So something's wrong. So Carter and Jack zip through the force fields. And they plant the C4, and they set a timer. They're like, okay, we need whatever. We're going to set a timer for, I don't remember, this long, and then it's going to explode. And then afterwards, the things go overheat, and it's going to fully, like, the ship is going to explode this way. So we have to be basically back through the gate in 15 minutes. Not a problem, right? They're fast. They can do that in, like, 15 seconds. In and out. So they zip back out and they meet back up with Daniel, and Daniel has the Naquada, but he's really struggling. I mean, the Naquada was carried by two people before, and he's carrying it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but I think there's just more. And as if that was a surprise to anybody, he collapses and the cuff falls off and he's unconscious.
And so now it's up to Jack and Sam, but Sam's feeling kind of hot.
Mm-hmm. So something is going on. And we need an explanation, right? So we don't go to the exposition room. We go to Hammond's office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. They didn't.
It's the exposition office.
See, it's a good thing that you're running us through this episode, because there have been multiple scenes where something that we need to know about happens that mm-hmm. I completely forgot is in the episode.
Yeah. So we get the explanation what happened. Anise saw in the data, basically right before they zipped through the gate, that they were developing antibodies against the virus that was being used, right? We heard about the virus earlier. It was not a surprise that would happen, right? Because that's what bodies do. It's a virus, I'm gonna kill it. And Anise is like, I'm afraid that we've solved the mystery of the Atenique's extinction. Once the immunity spread amongst the Atenique warriors, the armbands would be useless. I guess they never solved the problem.
Guess not.
But Hammond has a different concern. He's like, yeah, Atenix, they're dead anyway, so who cares? But SG-1 is likely out there on a planet full of heavily armed Defy with an advantage that's likely to disappear anytime. I mean, they're already developing antibodies, so... Mm-hmm. Which also now explains why Carter and Daniel were, like, so hot. Because it's a virus, right? They're getting sick.
Yeah. They're getting sick, yep. Yeah.
What does the body do? Increases the body temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So problem, the guards have found them. We get this really nice kind of, I don't know, Matrix style, like little special effect where like there's a staff weapon blast and both Carter and Jack kind of move in slow-mo out of the way.
Right, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so that's actually pretty cool. And there's some Zat blasts from the side. We don't see from whom, but we can guess who's there. Who's going to use a freaking Zat on the planet?
Right.
Must be Teal'c.
Yeah, hooray, Teal'c to the rescue.
Teal'c, and he's like, it seems my assistance is required after all. So, call back to what Jack had said earlier. So there's more guards, so Jack is like, okay, Teal'c, get Daniel out, because of course he's not Super Daniel anymore. Carter right. and Jack will take care of the guards. And in that second or whatever, we get an alarm, or actually a couple seconds after. Like, Teal'c and Daniel just make it outside the ship, and then or the base, and then alarms and force fields are going up. And unfortunately, Carter is caught by one. Like, she's not fast enough anymore. And she runs into it. And then she collapses. Her cuff falls off. We've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a slow motion shot. It's like Jack in slow motion runs towards the force field to get back to Carter. But same thing happens to him. Gets caught by the force field. His cuff falls off.
So they're both laying there, and but then...
Jack says, we should have brought more snacks.
Yeah, and Sam's telling him, you need to get out, because Jack's on the I can escape side of the force field, and she's not.
Yeah.
And he's like, nope, not leaving anyone behind. And he's trying to break the control panel, and it's not working. And
We have 1:56 to go until the C4 blasts. Meanwhile, outside, Daniel and Teal'c, Daniel's like, 10 minutes after the C4 goes, the whole mountain is going to explode. And Teal'c's like, I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel's like, so the fact that we're staying is based upon a completely informed decision. Teal'c's like,
and Teal'c's it is. Like, yep.
Daniel's like, yeah, just making sure. So the guards are coming. Carter's telling Jack to leave, but right on time, the C4 finally goes off. Their shields are down, so let's rush out.
Yep, so off they go running. Mm-hmm. And
meet up with Daniel and Teal'c, who've waited for them. So let's go. Yep. Gotta run to the gate.
So they head back to the gate, and so... I remember when they came through the gate initially, they superpowered through and knocked everyone out of the way. Mm-hmm. And now on the way back, it's like their best marksman, Teal'c.
Mm-hmm.
He just runs up to the DHD, and everyone else is shooting at the bad guys. Or did they even shoot at the bad guys?
No, they didn't. They didn't. They were like somewhere in the forest. They ran into two guards that Teal'c just took out, like straight up shot them.
Okay.
At the gate, there was one guy who was kind of still up, and Teal'c just shot them straight up.
And shot him too. Okay.
And there was nobody else. So they were basically just waiting, like hiding a little bit because they weren't sure there weren't any others. And Teal'c just runs to that DHD and just darts back out. And then they run towards the gate, and we see the ship blow. And of course, last second, they make it through.
Of course.
Of course, it has to be.
So
we go back to the SGC.
Yeah, and we get another scene that just, it felt like so completely expected.
Yes.
It's like, hey, we did it.
Yeah, and Jack.
And Hammond's right there, and he's like, oh, you kids.
Yeah, and Jack said this to Hammond, just remember, I retired. You wanted me back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, so they destroyed the ship, and Jack is kind of like, okay, like about that court-martial that's about to happen.
Yeah. But Hammond gives all of them an easy out, which is, hey, you know, alien influence.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have control, so
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, and all three, which I really liked, all three of them apologize to Hammond.
Yeah,
yeah, except for Teal'c. Well, that's the fourth, right?
But Teal'c points out he has no need to apologize.
Yeah. And Hammond points out Teal'c was actually following orders.
Yeah,
yeah. Anis is kind of disappointed. Because they didn't bring back the bands. But Carter, in passing, kind of quips at her. And she's like, we had other things on our minds.
Yeah.
And we get a little weird, but hint, given what we know about her character. She says, Anis and I both hope we can work together again in the future. To which Jack kind of responds, both of you can't wait for that.
Yeah.
And given what we know that they wanted that to be an ongoing character, it makes sense. But in that situation, I was like, why?
Yeah.
And in Jack's situation, I would be like, no, never again. You lied to us.
Right. Yeah. So it didn't make sense at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was going to point out how I didn't like how that played out.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Except that you explained why, so now it makes sense.
Yeah, that's also why I mentioned it even. Otherwise, I wouldn't have told you to not spoil what's going to happen. But I kind of wanted you to know, like, what's really happening in the production and why she's there.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yes. That's the end of this weird ride.
So, I enjoyed this episode.
Okay. So you think the 8.3 from IMDb is, like, correct?
Nope.
No. Okay, good.
It's too high.
I would have been surprised if you had said that. Yeah, no. I mean, it is enjoyable in a way, yes. Like, right?
Yeah, it was enjoyable.
Superhero story, right? It's like, oh, they got superpowers. Yeah. Got bitten by a spider. Got super, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, okay, so you know how you ask me about what deeper meanings, what morals, whatever comes out of this, and my answer today would be none. It's just a superficial...
With great power comes great responsibility, I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, Uncle Ben already told Peter Parker that, and it's...
We've heard it before.
Yeah, it just, it felt like a bottle episode. As far as the story goes, not location.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, true. It was a writer they hadn't used before.
Yeah, and knowing what I know now, it feels very much like a setup story for the introduction of a new character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was the whole reason.
And that makes the episode make a lot more sense, because mm-hmm. otherwise it was just like, they needed another story for the season.
Mm-hmm. Which, and I mean, probably also true. I mean, you know, we're in the beginning of season four. They're probably going to save the better stories for, or the bigger stories that they've planned for the later part of the season, right? To leading up to the end of the season again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm torn.
Okay, you're torn.
Should I be generous with my rating? No. Or not?
Just be yourself, I would say.
It's a 5.
It's a 5, okay. Yeah, I mean, the fact that we don't have a lot to talk about, really, it just tells you a lot.
Okay, the fact that there are critical scenes throughout the episode that I simply mm-hmm. didn't remember till you brought them up. I couldn't even remember what happened when they left the exploding ship mm-hmm. and got back to the gate.
To be fair, there wasn't a lot important that happened after that.
Yeah, it's like the entire ship exploded, episode we're done. From beginning to end. Yeah, we have 3.5 minutes to wrap up the rest of the mm-hmm. story. Go. The story itself was very predictable.
Mm-hmm. Very.
And I feel like at no point was I surprised by anything mm-hmm. that happened in the episode.
Yeah.
Even the big reveal that she'd been manipulating them was no big reveal.
No, and I think I have a feeling that is part of the problem of this character. Why it ultimately didn't work out. I mean, we'll see. I think you can read between the lines that there will be at least more episodes with her in this season. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that changes, but so far, based on how she was introduced, I'm like, yeah, not a surprise that she didn't make it.
Yeah, I think it was a calculated risk that didn't pay off. Mm-hmm. They were trying to do something similar to what we had with 7 of 9, where you had this new character. Similar, but not the same, right? Yeah,
there would have been way better ways of using her, like introducing her somehow, than, oh, she basically lies to them.
Yeah, so what I think they were trying to do was establish her as a character who's ultimately a better person in the end, mm-hmm. but they have to establish a distrust for us in the beginning, mm-hmm. and then that gets resolved over the growth of the character. But instead, we have some of that with 7 of 9. Like she was Borg. Now she's not. Yeah. She doesn't fit in well. Yeah. Can we really trust her? She does things that don't make sense.
And, yeah. But she didn't. Yeah. I mean, she didn't lie in that sense. She didn't She did not betray their trust.
Right. Yeah. At no point does the 7 of 9 character betray trust. You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a big difference. And I think, I mean, whatever you think about her, like the Angel as an actress, as a character, I think she does well. Like she plays it well. Like it's not, I don't think that was the problem. It's not the acting. She is a beautiful woman. Like she's also not a problem. I think it's just the way I mean, we've given the writers crap for not knowing how to write women. They figured it out with Carter, but I think they're still not there.
There's still opportunity for growth.
Yes. Carter and Fraser, they figured it out over time, but like no. It's not ready. Yeah, and I mean, it worked out for Voyager, so I can understand the motivation of being like, hey, I mean, it worked for them, so maybe it's good for us. Let's try.
It could have worked, but the initial setup failed.
Yeah. And maybe she wasn't the right person at the end for that. But it's hard, isn't it? That's hard to tell because, I mean, one, we've only seen her in one episode so far. And two, like, yeah, you also need the material for it. So far, at least, I would say it hasn't worked. And said, and I know, we know, I mean, I've, since I've told you, we know it is not going to work out now. So,
yeah.
Yeah. As I said, based on the introduction, I'm like,
Yeah, I think the fatal flaw in introducing this character was introducing her with lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were other ways of doing this, right? It's just not.
Yeah.
Yeah, she could have been a Tok'ra that just comes and she's open about everything and it just doesn't work out. And we would have been like, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything works the way you thought. It's fine. But it's very clear that there is a hidden agenda, and that's not going to work.
Yeah, they could have put the agenda onto someone, another Tok'ra that mm-hmm. shows up partway through the episode.
Oh yeah,
and then give her a conflict mm-hmm. of do I do the right thing as far as the project and the humans, or do I do the loyal thing for the Tok'ra and have her try and work through that.
Yeah, that could have been 100% how this could have worked, but it just didn't.
Nope.
Yeah. Not a surprise. I'm going to agree with you and give it a 5. Like, I do remember the episode. Like, I've seen it often enough, and I do remember what happens, and I know exactly what episode this was. Like, when I saw upgrades, I'm like, okay, that's the cuffing episode. It is a fun episode. It's just not, it's not good enough, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's still a 5. Like, it's not a 3. It's not a 4. It's just, it's too obvious.
Yeah.
It's too obvious.
I don't feel like this is a setup for a weak season. I feel like this is just one episode that
happens all the time. In every season, we've had episodes where we're like, something, the basic idea, the basic concept, I think was fun, right? To say, hey, like, what if the team had superpowers all of a sudden? What would they do? Fun concept, fun idea. You can do a lot of fun things, and they do some fun things with it. Like the whole thing, like kicking the wall and like destroying mm-hmm. balls and running really fast and running, like jumping over fences and going to O'Malley's and not being rational, being kind of like teenagers. Hey, all of that, fun. I get it. It's just something doesn't feel coherent here.
Yep, I'm with you.
Yeah.
And, so at the beginning when you told me the average rating for this, mm-hmm. I was quite surprised that mm-hmm. it was rated as high as it was.
Well, given that there's a beautiful woman in it, probably not.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but still. I mean, yes, she was beautiful. And she had a fun costume.
Mm-hmm.
Not
as ridiculous as 7 of 9s.
So exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. Her being beautiful mm-hmm. was not enough to get this extra chevrons.
No, it was not. That brings us to, I think, the final fun bit we usually do. Let's have a look at the mm-hmm. next episode. So the next episode is titled Crossroads. And checking on the... Nope, I'm not telling you the German title either.
Probably for the best.
Spoilers again. Big spoilers again.
So Crossroads, I feel like the use of this is the title
mm-hmm.
is revealing. And it's not like, hey, there's an intersection of roads.
Mm-hmm.
This is the metaphorical crossroads where you know, like, I have reached a crossroads in the process, in my life, in whatever, and must make a serious decision. And so I think this is going to be a crossroads where SG-1 it's probably other people that they have dealt with in the past. and they reconnect with them. And now they have to make a decision about whether or not they're going to continue that relationship.
So I've written down what you've predicted. We're gonna see if you're right about that. Like I'm not gonna tell you. I'm not gonna tell you what this is about. It's very interesting as usual. Whether you're right or not, we'll see when we've watched Crossroads.
Well, considering my track record, I've got the spirit, but not what the episode actually is.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Anyway, we should probably wrap up. I think we've talked way more than I thought about this episode. So let's just let the good people know real quick where they can find out more about you.
Okay, well, how about Jake Amet on the various social medias, but mostly on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and PixelFed, and then I'll toss out a couple shows. One that you're on occasionally, that I'm on regularly, Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS.
Good show.
And then the show I do with Brian Chaffin, The Context Machine.
We have to mention that. Mandatory mention. The Context Machine.
I agree.
So I'm also with you on the British Tech Network usually. Big show on that show. We talk about tech. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. You can also reach out to us, like if you have thoughts about this episode or any other episode, predictions for the season, which I think we're still taking those, we're only early on, so I'll take predictions. Reach out to us either via email, hello@retrorewatch.com if you want to send us an email, or Mastodon, retrorewatch@techhangout.social, or on bluesky@retrorewatch.com. Just send us what your thoughts are, what are you thinking about this episode, what are your predictions, anything. Do you think Freya was a good choice or not? Like, any of that. And I think with that, let's let the virus run its course and see you next week.
I love this plan. Let's close that iris.